This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. This is The Morning Run, and you're with Julian Ng, Lin Mark, as well as Shariz Abdullah. The Communications and Multimedia Ministry is considering taking action against news portal operators who allow their readers to leave comments that touch on racial, religious and royal institutions' sensitivities. Minister Gobind Deo said that if the portal operators failed to monitor and allow such comments on their portals, it was feared that these comments could incur the wrath of various parties and cause bigger problems.
Yeah, so he said that his ministry has received many complaints from the public who lamented that they seem to be no monitoring by the operators of the readers' comments posted on their portals. So here's a clip from Minister Gobind Singh.
People have asked me why it is we allow some of these comments, which are very, very inflammatory in nature, to remain, and why it is we do not have guidelines, or why it is we do not have rules that deal with it. Technically, if you look at strict application of law, one can argue a publisher is responsible for whatever it is appears on his website. So likewise, in a portal, one can argue that the person who allows somebody to comment on his portal should be responsible for the comment made. So I think this is something that we are looking at.
Yep, and that was Communications and Multimedia Minister Gobind Singh Deo. And he goes on to add that this is still under consideration and has not been brought to Cabinet yet.
So Gobind has also asked that news portal operators be more careful and take full responsibility for what is written in the comments section of their portals to avoid creating any issues. He's also said that these portal operators should also post news of high value and which could help strengthen national unity. So the Young Pertuan Agong Al-Sultan Abdullah Riayatuddin Al-Mustafa Bilashah has called for stern action to be taken against any of these incidences, including irresponsible use of social media.
Yeah, and also he added, he reminded the public that freedom of speech is not absolute, but comes with responsibility. And he said that members of the public should be mindful and not to post comments online that could threaten the national security and harmony. So here's another clip from Gobind Singh.
When you talk about freedom of speech, it must be looked at in context of the law that exists, in context of the limitations that exist for the purposes of ensuring that there's public order and that national security is maintained. We have no issue with social media, we've got no issue with the portals, we've got no issues with the press and how it is they report your stories. But again, I think everybody must be mindful of the fact that whatever it is you write may have very, very adverse impacts on society.
Yeah, I think that this kind of laws, the question is whether this is going one step forward and two step backwards, because we really want to dial back some of those old laws like the ISA, the OSA and the Sedition Act, right? And how do you actually define what is insensitive and what is not? Because different people have different opinions.
It's very, very subjective. I find it interesting that the minister says that we have no issues with the press, because I think that a new law will impact the press and will cause them to self-censor, because you will be worried about what people post in your social media comments. And that's very similar to the problem we had with the anti-fake news law. You know, it was geared at stopping the spread of fake news, but effectively what it did was curb the media.
Yeah, but looking at the details here, I mean, one thing different that I noticed is that now this law is about news portal operators to regulate or to monitor comments from their readers, rather than government taking action from the, you know, from reports from on a social media user. So, I mean, there is a slight difference, but nevertheless, when you want to introduce a new law, or the question is whether or not to strengthen the existing law that we already have. For example, in the Communication and Multimedia Act.
Yeah, I think the question is also on whether society is mature enough to self-regulate. I mean, we all know about that IMU student incident, that sexist comments. And you found that at the end of the day, the offending remarks were vilified on social media. Is that enough? And is that punishment enough for that person without having laws watching over us?
Yeah. So again, this is part of self-regulation, I guess. And I think portals, platforms have that responsibility. And I guess it's just a matter of how to do it. And at the moment, it seems that we are going towards a direction where a law is being mulled, whether it should be introduced.
I think there is also a difference here between things that you find offensive and hate speech. So if you find someone, on social media whose opinion you disagree with, then I feel like maybe then we need to encourage society as a whole to have that discussion, to ask, why do you disagree with me or why do I disagree with you? Let's exchange opinions rather than just trumpeting the fact that I'm offended, you've offended me, therefore someone, the government, must do something about it. But then, of course, there is also the line that has to be drawn with hate speech.
Okay, 7:22, Parliament reconvened yesterday for its second sitting under the PH government. One of the bills expected to be tabled is an amendment to Article 1, Subsection 2 of the Federal Constitution to restore the status of Sabah and Sarawak as equal partners with Peninsula. This was a major step towards honouring the Malaysian Agreement 1963. So to help us better understand the significance of this development, we have on the line Professor James Chin, Director of the Asia Institute at the University of Tasmania. Good morning, Professor. The Federation of Malaysia was formed in 1963, recognizing Sabah and Sarawak as partners with equal rights to Malaysia. However, a constitutional amendment in 1976 resulted in Sabah and Sarawak becoming the 12th and 13th states in Malaysia. What was the rationale for this change in the status back then?
Good morning to all your listeners. I think if you speak to the people at that time, those MPs who were in the day one when the vote was taken, those MPs that I've spoken to from Sabah and Sarawak about this amendment, they told me they actually did not understand the significance of it. Back in 1976, it wasn't an issue. Basically, I think on the part of the federal government, what they were trying to do was they were trying to standardize the list of all the states in the federation. So they did not understand the depth of the feeling in Sabah and Sarawak over this issue. So for them, it wasn't a key issue at that time. And I think the MPs on Sabah and Sarawak at that time also let the people of Sabah and Sarawak down, because I think they also did not keep an eye on the ball.
So that was back then, Professor, but how about now? What are the implications today if we were to revert the status of Sabah Sarawak as an equal partner with Peninsula?
Well, I think this is a hugely important step for the people of Sabah and Sarawak and also the rest of Malaysia, in that it really sends a very, very powerful signal out to the Malaysian public that Sabah and Sarawak are not the normal Malaysian states. These two states were the founders of the Malaysian Federation, and therefore they have special status. And I think we need this for the very simple reason that the people of Sabah and Sarawak has felt that for the past 50 years they've been marginalized in the system, and they were not accorded the right recognition as the original founders of the Federation.
Professor, the amendment to the constitution that's on the table, that's under discussion now, the government is going to require a two-thirds majority in order to get it to pass. What's the likelihood that the government won't get the required majority? What would be the grounds for objecting to this amendment, if any?
Right now, the calculation on the Pakatan Harapan side is that this amendment will pass for the very simple reason that they expect all the MPs, regardless of whether they are in government or the opposition in Sabah and Sarawak, to vote for this amendment. So if we count all the MPs from Sabah and Sarawak, plus the rest of the Pakatan Harapan MPs from Peninsula Malaysia, they will reach the two-thirds majority. The only people that can hold up or to block the amendment are the 19 MPs from GPS, the ruling coalition in Sarawak. If they were to block it, then I foresee problems for the amendment. But at the present moment, they've not indicated which way they will vote. But my understanding is that given the depth of feeling in Sabah and Sarawak, it is very likely they will support this amendment. You have to remember, this amendment actually doesn't do anything. It doesn't actually add anything to the Constitution. It's just to revert back to the original wording of the Constitution that was adopted in 1963.
And just looking forward to look into the situation, if the law is being passed, what do you think is going to be on the agenda for Sabah and Sarawak to take advantage of the new law? Is there anything to right the wrongs that have been already made?
The law itself doesn't add anything. In terms of the practicality, as I mentioned, it's just a recognition or a symbolic recognition of the special status for Sabah and Sarawak. There's no implications for any other stuff in terms of the constitution. But it will send a very powerful signal to the whole of country, like Sabah and Sarawak are special states in the Federation. The real work in terms of getting putting the system in place for the special autonomy that Sabah and Sarawak got under MA63, that is actually a separate thing. That is actually being handled by the special federal cabinet committee on MA63. That committee has been up and running since December last year. They've also set up two committees underneath, which is a technical committee, and they're actually working out in details how to decentralize some of the powers that were taken over by the federal government, which rightly should belong to Sabah and Sarawak, and they're working out in details how to pass these powers back to Sabah and Sarawak.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning. And that was Professor James Chin at the University of Tasmania. We're coming up to the 7:30 news. And when we come back, Finland is in the news. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.